Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it is a Wednesday. It's March 12th. Hope your day is going well in the second week of Lent. And looking forward to the program and sharing it with you on a Wednesday. We will have all kinds of great information. First up, after the news, will be an interview with my friend and my little sister from another mister, Vanessa Denha Garmo, and she hosts Epiphany, of course, Monday through Friday, locally here in southeastern Michigan, and fills in for me on Catholic Connection on a regular basis. She has a media background. We actually met when we were street reporters in Detroit and have been besties ever since. But many people do not know that she's also a life coach, and she does a lot of work with businesses and also leadership training. And we're going to talk about leadership, particularly Catholic leadership, especially if you are in a position of leadership, whether it's at the pastoral level, at the church, or maybe it is in business and you want to see if you're doing a good job as a Catholic leader. We'll discuss. She's actually been doing a series on this on her program Epiphany, as well as posting it on her Facebook and her other social media outlets. So Vanessa will be actually doing the show for me tomorrow because I have to take the day off, and then I'll be back with you on Friday. But she is amazing and wears many hats, and we're going to talk about Catholic leadership with Vanessa Denha Garmo at about 15 minutes past the hour. In our Shrines and Wonders segment for Shrines and Wonders Wednesday, we are going to take you to the beautiful Italian town of San Gimignano, which is a great area to be because it's not too far from Siena, right, which Catholics love to visit because of the amazing Doctor of the Church, St. Catherine, and for other reasons because it's beautiful. But also, it's not too far from Florence. So we'll discuss San Gimignano, but more specifically, taking a look at the beautiful saint from this stunning town of San Gimignano. When those two consonants, a G and the end, are together, it's Gna, so it's San Gimignano. And St. Fina or Serafina. Beautiful story about this very young saint who died after a very, very rough life filled with great suffering. But she was much loved, and there's a special feast in her honor in San Gimignano each year, actually today on her feast day, which is March 12th. And we'll also take a look, just a few little tips from an article I did on the National Catholic Register, which is posted, all about how to have a great trip in Italy and Rome despite the crowds, because the crowds are starting to pick up. You can find that at ncregister.com, and I'm very grateful that EWTN also put it out in their e-blast this morning. So if you sign up for our free newsletter, you'll find it there. And speaking of all things Italy, of course, it's a Wednesday, and Joan Lewis is joining us with the latest Vatican news. Let's take a look at the weather and see what's happening right now across the country. We have a Pacific storm that will bring heavy mountain snow and strong winds to the Sierra Nevada area, as well as heavy rainfall over parts of coastal Southern California. That will be here with us through tomorrow. We have severe thunderstorms likely this afternoon and evening in the Arkansas and Texas areas. And then we have an extended period of critical to extremely critical fire weather conditions continuing in the Southern Plains through Saturday. And that's for most of the day Saturday, so the first part of the weekend. We are grateful that you're joining us this morning on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. A busy news day, never a dull moment. So let's get started. It is 4 minutes past the hour on March 12th, the Feast of St. Fina from San Gimignano. Well, the Apostolic Vicar of Aleppo describing the latest surge in bloodshed in Syria, the nation still in turmoil as a wave of violence grips a war-torn nation. Deborah Castellano-Luboff from Vatican News reports of violence which erupted last Thursday, claiming more than 1,300 lives.
Syria must be reunited, and the international community must contribute to peace efforts, says Bishop Hanna Jalouf. In an interview with Vatican Media's Roberto Cetera, the Apostolic Vicar of Aleppo and spiritual leader of Syria's Latin Catholics discussed the traumatic situation enveloping the divided country. Heavy clashes began on Thursday, mostly between Alawite supporters of former President Bashar al-Assad and the country's new rulers in the coastal Latakia region. home to the Alawite minority associated with the Assad family. The Alawites are the second largest religious group in Syria after Sunni Muslims. The Assad-led state recruited heavily from the Alawite community for its army and security apparatus. Within 72 hours, more than 1,300 people were killed, many of whom were civilians. According to the UN, in the retaliatory attacks in the region, entire Alawite families with women and children were killed. Many Alawite civilians had their homes burned down, and many have been forced to flee. The lack of response on the part of the international community has exacerbated the situation, leading to calls for investigations and accountability. In his interview, Bishop Jalouf discusses whether the recent armed clashes are once again pushing the country towards civil war and whether the new regime is keeping its promises of pursuing national reunification and tolerance toward minorities. He also warns against foreign powers fueling internal divisions. In such a precarious and tense context, he was asked what he believes to be the role of Christians. The bishop responded, "We remain committed to the promises made by President al-Sharaa for the respect and full participation of all minorities, whether ethnic or religious."
Pope Francis had a restful night, according to a statement published on Wednesday morning by the Holy See Press Office. This morning, the Vatican saying the Pope continued following the spiritual exercises of the Roman Curia via video link, as he did the past 2 days. He's also continuing his treatment and respiratory and mobility-related physical therapy. Pope Francis's clinical situation remains stable, with doctors confirming slight improvements within a context, they'd say, that remains complex. Ross Cullen tells us the U.S. and Ukraine are expected to talk in the next few days about the details of a proposed ceasefire between Kyiv and Moscow.
Andriy Yermak was the lead negotiator for the Ukrainian delegation meeting their U.S. counterparts on Tuesday in Jeddah, and he said the discussions also covered potential security guarantees for Ukraine, something the government here sees as crucial in any future peace settlement.
Ukraine agreeing to a tentative plan for 30 days, but Moscow still has to accept. Ukrainian President Zelensky says it's now up to the U.S. to convince Russia to sign on. President Trump is set to meet with NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte at the White House tomorrow to discuss the plan in more detail. A deportation hearing set for today in Lower Manhattan for a pro-Palestinian activist at Columbia University. Mahmoud Khalil was arrested by ICE agents last weekend and had his student visa revoked. The White House saying the State Department reserves a right to revoke a person's student visa. Press Secretary Caroline Levitt saying that the student distributed pro-Hamas propaganda on campus, propaganda that called for violence.
Khalil was an individual who was given the privilege of coming to this country to study at one of our nation's finest universities and colleges. And he took advantage of that opportunity, of that privilege, by siding with terrorists.
Monday, the president saying that his arrest will be the first of many to come. President Trump saying there will be more similar deportation efforts for people who the Trump administration feels are engaged in pro-terrorist anti-Semitic activity. Big changes in the Department of Government Efficiency at the Department of Education. A senior department official announcing over 1,300 staffers received notifications they're being fired. President Trump repeatedly said he would like states to control education. And President Trump also saying he sees signs of his tariffs already working. Speaking from the White House, he adds there are reports of plants that were under construction in Canada and Mexico now moving to the U.S.
We're the biggest, we're the best, and I'm very optimistic. I have to tell you, I'm very optimistic.
He added that his tariffs were all about bringing jobs and manufacturing back to America. Ira Spitzer tells us a Canadian province, meanwhile, is pausing a planned surcharge on electricity exported to parts of Michigan, Minnesota, and New York State.
Ontario Premier Doug Ford says the province will temporarily suspend its 25% charge on electricity exports. The move comes after U.S. President Trump threatened to double tariffs on Canadian steel and aluminum from 25% to 50% in retaliation.
Ford says he made the decision after U.S. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick agreed to renew trade talks. President Trump had announced a doubling of tariffs on Canadian steel and aluminum in response to the power surcharge. The president says Elon Musk's Tesla company is facing unfair backlash for his work with the government after posting on Truth Social that he would buy a Tesla car in support of Elon Musk. Trump had several of the vehicles brought in front of the White House for him to look over.
They love the product, but because he's finding all sorts of terrible things that have taken place against our country, they want to penalize him in an economic sense, and I just think that's very unfair.
Trump said he would buy Tesla cars for his staff to use since he is unable to drive. In his Truth Social post, Trump claiming who he called radical left lunatics are illegally boycotting Tesla, the automaker which Musk owns, saw its worst day on the stock market yesterday since 2020. And the House passing a six-month funding bill to prevent a government shutdown, the bill narrowly passing 217 to 213 yesterday, with all but one Republican supporting the six-month stopgap measure.
The Republicans stood together, and we had one Democrat vote with us to do the right thing, and that is to fund the government.
That's House Speaker Mike Johnson saying the bill freezes funding, and it's a responsible thing to do. The proposal now heads to the Senate, where its fate remains uncertain. In California, the attorney general there and the Los Angeles County District Attorney, Nathan Hochman, are announcing the seizure of 50 pounds of fentanyl powder, the largest such bust in state history. Hochman says the amount of powder can produce 14 million lethal doses of fentanyl.
This one seizure could have killed literally every resident in L.A. County by itself.
A traffic stop leading to the January 22, 2025 discovery of the fentanyl powder, 12 pounds of opium, along with gun suppressors and ammunition in an apartment in Downey, California. Arrested are 43-year-old Priscilla Gomez, her 47-year-old brother Gustavo Omar Gomez, and 35-year-old Carlo Manuel Mariscal, all three facing charges that range from drug trafficking to firearms-related charges, and all are facing more than 20 years in prison if convicted. A lot of news on schools and states banning cell phone use for teens. Governor Kathy Hochul in New York wants a universal phone ban, as Natalie Migliori tells us, solidified in her state's budget.
The bell-to-bell ban is endorsed by the Common Sense Media Council's 80,000 members, including child welfare attorney and mom, Muna Heaven.
School should never be a place where there is competition between learning and scrolling.
The proposal includes exclusions for children with individual educational plans, medical issues, and in certain tech classes. Long Island teen Lily Dewar is on board.
I'd love to experience an entire school day that's free of phones and free of social media.
The ban is set to go into effect at the beginning of next school year.
And in Florida, law there currently banning cell phone use during school instructional time, but a measure that would expand the ban to the entire school day has unanimously cleared the House Education Administration Subcommittee. Its sponsor, Representative Demi Busada, says the bill also requires schools to designate locations on campuses where phones can be used with administrators' permission.
Cell phones not only cause constant distractions to a student's focus during the school day, which impedes their ability to learn, but it also has shown to increase bullying throughout the school day.
Statistics show fighting threats and bullying down and achievement up in schools that have chosen to ban cell phone use on campuses. And finally, in our news segment at almost 14 minutes past the hour, Matt Madison tells us about TikTok, which is very popular with young people, how they're rolling out some new features. The company says it's aimed at keeping younger users safe.
It comes as the social media giant faces a potential ban in the U.S. next month over national security concerns. The features allow parents to limit the amount of time their children spends on the app. It's an expansion of TikTok's existing family pairing feature, which links the app on a child's smartphone to their parents.
It is a Wednesday morning. Great to be with you on a Wednesday and every day here at EWTN. We have a great lineup for you. We have Vanessa Denha-Garmo, of course. She's a lead guest host here for Catholic Connection, also the host of her own show for 5 years on Catholic Radio, Epiphany on Ave Maria Radio in Detroit and across the state of Michigan and Ohio and elsewhere regionally from noon to 1 Eastern time every day. Check it out. But many people may not know that she also is a coach, a life coach and a leadership coach. And we're going to talk about Catholic leadership this morning. She's been doing a cool series on that. Vanessa joins us up next. And then in our Shrines and Wonders Wednesday, our Italy segment this morning at 28 minutes past the hour, taking a look at our saint of the day, San Fina from San Gimignano in Tuscany, a gorgeous town known as the medieval Manhattan. I'll explain. And then we wrap up staying in Italy, basically, this time in Rome with our sister Joan Lewis and the latest Vatican news. We are so glad you're listening. It is a Wednesday. You're listening to EWTN. We'll be right back.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I come from the other side of the tracks, see? My uncle used to have slot machines. Put one nickel in and it emptied. And I brought him home in a bag, and my mother looked at me. Where did you get all that money? I said, I won him. You didn't win him. He fixed the machine. I didn't care if he fixed the machine or not, you know?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Vanessa, by the way, will be filling in for me tomorrow. I appreciate that. She's a regular guest host here for me at Catholic Connection, but also a host in her own right for 5 years now. Epiphany. And a lot of people don't know because she doesn't go around bragging about it, but if you check out her website, you will find that she wears many hats. And in addition to working together, we work on many projects outside of Catholic Radio because we both do media training and public relations and whatnot. But V is also a certified life coach, and she does all kinds of leadership retreats and efforts and meets with business clients on a regular basis, helping them with leadership. Vanessa, first I want to let people know how you got into this, because you were doing a lot. I mean, we grew up together in the media, basically, in Detroit. But what prompted you to seek out this area to help people? Because it's very unique, because you're a life coach. So what does that exactly mean, first of all?
I'm certified in leadership and life coaching, and I help people reach their goals and develop their leadership style using their natural talents and build strong teams within a corporation. And one of the reasons that led me down this road is when I was working with clients in communications and PR, I would find that there was a big disconnect mm-hmm. in communications and how people communicated internally. And so I started doing communication audits. And as I was auditing organizations and how they communicate and why there was such a high turnover, I realized a lot had to be with the lack of leadership development and management, even at the entry-level positions of management, team leads, and then all the way up to the executives and CEOs. And so I decided 6-7 years ago to get trained in leadership development and leadership coaching, and I've been doing it since 2019, and it's been very fruitful. I coach people at all levels of management, leadership, team leads, building teams, and a big part of it still is the lack of how people communicate. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's huge. Yeah.
I mean, and that's
when you
why
say
I wrote,
communicate, I know you do media training and PR.
Yeah.
You're talking about in-house communication between staff members.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes. And that's why I wrote my ebook, Conversations That Create the Culture, because it's how we communicate will create a culture. It's either going to be a fruitful culture or a very toxic one. And it's mm-hmm. either, you know, not giving the right information to managers, not communicating to your team members, over communicating in a very hostile way, being very combative. I tell people, don't criticize down. You got to coach people up. You know, people mm-hmm. don't want to constantly be told what they're doing wrong. They want to explain of how to do things better. So I teach leaders how to coach their team members, how to coach them up to be more productive. So, I was praying the other day, as I was walking before Lent started, and I said, God, I feel like I'm called to do something more during this Lenten season. And I was literally walking around my block, and I felt the Lord say, why don't you teach people in 40 ways how to become a better leader? And I'm like, oh,
So I'm like, that'll be a great 40-day Lenten challenge in leadership development, because I truly believe we all have leaders in us, T. They just have to be developed. And we all have natural talents, and I use assessments to identify what those talents are. We all have weaknesses, and we have to learn how to manage them, right? And so I teach people how to use their natural talents to lead in a very authentic way. And that's in the 40-day tips, you know, are really going over very important things like being silent. You know, sometimes you just need to sit with God and help him guide you into making decisions, right? Just like hear his voice. Or one of my favorite things to do with leaders, I tell them, go on a listening tour and ask questions of your team and find out what's going on in every department.
That's why, a great idea.
Yeah, I tell all my managers that. Go on a listening tour. Stop talking. Stop telling what you think needs to be done. Find out what they think is going on or what's wrong in the organization or the department they're working in. And it's unbelievable how much they learn. And they come back and they tell me, they're like, that's the best thing I've ever done. And I said, don't give statements, ask questions.
Yeah. Remember that show, I don't know if it's still on, but where the boss would basically hide his identity and go into work at one of his companies if they had a big company.
Yes.
That was a really good show.
Yes, yeah. I forgot that. That's a great idea. Undercover Boss.
Andrew said it's Undercover Boss.
Undercover Boss. And that's kind of like, it's similar, you know, you go, you're kind of like a fly on the wall. That's another thing I tell managers, I advise them to do, is just shadow. Just observe. Don't say anything. Watch how people are working in the department. See how they're interacting with each other. And so these daily tips are just little things you can do every single day to really develop your leadership style using your own natural talents.
Okay, I want to do more on this. We only have about 3 minutes left. But give us, first of all, where can we find these tips?
Because so you can go to my website, EpiphanyCommunications.com, and all my social media platforms are on there. But I'm posting every single day on TikTok, Vanessa Denhagarmo, and on X, Vanessa Denhagarmo, Communications Evangelist Coach, Vanessa Denhagarmo on Facebook. That's my public page. And on LinkedIn, Vanessa Denhagarmo. So I post them every single day. They're just 3 minutes. And you also can find the links to all my social media platforms on my website at Epiphany Communications. So it's easy to find. You can register for my newsletter because I'm putting them in my newsletter as well every Thursday. I have a weekly newsletter. And so they're pretty much everywhere. If you just Google my name, you'll find it.
All right, so give us one tip. I know you said that you have information for about 3 minutes. We have just about 3 minutes left. So let's give one solid tip. You've given many over the last few days since Lump began.
So, T, I'm going to tell you, the biggest problem I see is lack of self-awareness. And I haven't gone into that yet, but that's going to be one of my tips. So I'm giving you a sneak preview. Really know who you are. What are your talents and what are your weaknesses? What are you failing to do? Without that self-awareness, there will never be a productive work environment. And that's the biggest problem I see today, along with the communication disconnect, is leaders, they will not really acknowledge their failings and their downfalls and their mistakes. And I tell leaders all the time, you want to build trust in your workplace, admit when you make a mistake and promise to do better. Your team will respect you more. They will connect with you more. They will want to work with you because they see that you're human and you admit you made a mistake. And I struggled with one CEO for a long time who made a huge mistake. And I said, what are you so fearful of? I go, they're not going to respect you, me. And I go, they don't respect you now. I said, admit you made the mistake, fix it, and move on. And as soon as he did that, the whole environment and the workplace changed. And now everybody loves him. Because he admitted, you know what, you guys, I made a mistake. We should have never done that project the way that we did it. We upset the client. It was my decision, and it was a bad decision, and I'm sorry, and we're going to correct it. And as soon as he did that, that whole environment changed within the workplace. And now everybody brags about how much they love this guy. So have self-awareness. You know, if things are going on that are wrong in your workplace, if people are leaving, if you have a high turnover of employees, if there's a lot of infighting, ask yourself, what am I doing wrong? What is happening here? And then then ask people, how can I be a better leader? Where do you think the disconnects are? What do you think I'm doing wrong? You know, ask advice from other people around you. They may not always be right, but you'd be amazed at how much you learn about yourself from the eyes of other people.
Now, how often does that happen, though, do you think, in business, V?
Very little. I mean, there's a lot of insecurity, you know, of people. There's, you know, pride gets in the way. Ego gets in the way. But that's why people love coaches like me, because I'm an outside person.
You're coming in from the outside.
And yeah. I don't have a vested interest other than helping them. You know, I don't have any skin in the game. I'm just trying to help them become more productive, be more profitable, you know, don't lose employees, and just help them reach their goals. And that's why a lot of people like to work with me, because, and then I don't divulge information. I don't tell this manager what this manager says. Everything is very private. So they don't know, nobody knows what the other person is telling me. I'm just trying to help them become better leaders. And then, you know, but I see it all the time, T. And as soon as people admit they've have, you know, downfalls and correct it, it gets so much better in the workplace.
Yeah, because it's humility, and you move that pride out of the way. V, we have to have you back on. Let's do something next week. So I'm going to do two segments on this because I have so many questions.
Sounds good,
really
T.
important.
Thank you.
In-house communication, and also I think helping people with getting the message out about their company as well. You and I can talk about that. Vanessa Denagarmo, thank you so much. You can hear her on Epiphany and check out her website as well. We'll be right back.
On 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The ninth commandment, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife. We already discussed in the sixth commandment the problems of sexual sins themselves, but what the Lord is teaching here is rooted in the word covet. To covet means to inordinately or inappropriately desire something or someone. And in this case, the Lord is saying to us that we are in no way to covet, to look with lust at another person, particularly our neighbor's wife, but others in general, and that therefore all pornography and things like that have to go, all entertaining of lustful thoughts has to go. And God can help us by His grace to do that. And therefore, in this commandment, He summons us to take authority over our thought life and our sexual passions. The ninth commandment, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com. What does the Holy Spirit do for the church? The Catholic Catechism tells us that behind every vital and saving action in each part of the body, the church, is the Holy Spirit. There are numerous venues through which the Holy Spirit works to build up the body in charity. Through baptism, through the sacraments, through the grace of the apostles, through the virtues, through charisms. Charisms are special graces from the Holy Spirit which directly or indirectly benefit the church. The Catechism describes a charism as a wonderfully rich grace for the apostolic vitality and holiness of the entire body, provided they are genuine gifts and are used in response to authentic promptings of the Holy Spirit in keeping with charity, the true measure of all charisms. This is Peggy Stanton. And this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
I do hope you're having a blessed Wednesday in the second week of Lent. Good to be with you on a Wednesday, March 12, 2025. This is our Italy Shrines and Wonders Wednesday segment, where I take a look at different areas of Italy based on my book, Italy's Shrines and Wonders, published by EWTN. You can get it at our religious catalog. And for those of you in the Detroit area, or if you know someone who's going to be in southeastern Michigan, we're doing a really cool event. And this is coming up locally. We are doing an evening with T and Deacon Dom and a local chef, Michelle Bomarito, who's incredible. She's actually been on the Food Network. She's a devout Catholic and has trained and done a lot of work in Italy as a chef. And we're going to be making one of the recipes from my book, the Riboletta Soup, in the Tuscany section, which is why I'm bringing it up, because we're talking about Tuscany this morning because of St. Fina. And the Riboletta Soup is amazing. It is a vegetarian soup, and we're going to have a nice spread, and we're going to have a little interaction with me and Deacon Dom and Michelle about growing up in an Italian-American household. We're going to tell the story about how we first discovered the Riboletta soup in the town that we're talking about this morning, San Gimignano in Tuscany. So that's coming up on March 27th locally in Michigan. You'll find it on my Facebook page. And if you know anybody in southeastern Michigan, we have about 10 spots left. I just got an email from Corporate Travel. It's almost sold out. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Hope if you have friends in the area, that we will see you there. Okay, so beautiful feast day today. This saint that is really not that well known, Santa Fina, and she, as I mentioned, is from the town of San Gimignano in Tuscany. Now, San Gimignano is a great place because it is in Tuscany, first of all, which is just drop-dead gorgeous. I mean, it's just, Tuscany is amazing. I love Tuscany. I like Umbrian better. I'm a little bit biased because we live there part-time of the year. They're both very beautiful. And what I think I like about San Gimignano is it has so many things to explore. First of all, it's known as the medieval Manhattan. And what does that mean? Well, they call it the medieval Manhattan because of all the towers. So when you're driving up to this gorgeous city in the rolling hills of Tuscany, you know it's San Gimignano. If you've done even a little bit of research, done your homework, and you put this on your bucket list, you can't miss it. I remember the first time we pulled up to it. It's just gorgeous. And there are some towers that you can still actually visit on your own. You can take a little elevator up. You can walk up the stairs. And when you get to the top of these towers, they sell tickets on the towers that are still in pretty good shape and the ones that they've refurbished. You have this amazing view of Tuscany. It's just crazy gorgeous. But it's also close to Florence, about an hour from Florence, and also an hour from Siena. So if you're in that area, for Catholics, it's great because you can use it as a base, but most people usually stay in Siena or Florence. But it's just wonderful because there's so much history there. It has award-winning gelato shops, I mean, world-famous gelato shops there. And the main piazza with Hotel La Cisterna, which is where we first had the Ribollita soup, is just breathtaking. There's actually this big well in the middle of the piazza that's so pretty. But Santa Fina is much loved in this beautiful Tuscan town of San Gimignano. And I do have a summary on my Travel Italy Expert website. Even if you did a search on Wikipedia, if you put in St. Fina, TravelItalyExpert.com will come up. But let's learn a little bit about St. Fina, okay? She lived a very short life in the 13th century, and she is much loved, as I mentioned, and greatly venerated in this special town outside of Siena. She suffered greatly at an early age. Serious illness left her paralyzed, and she spent several years lying on a board. Imagine that, lying on a board made of a wooden pallet rather than a bed. During her sickness, she lost her parents, and afterward, only one neighborhood girl would care for her and bring her food. And church tradition tells us that it was a great Saint Gregory that appeared to her and predicted the time of her death. Now, despite all the suffering, instead of complaining, she thanked God for her numerous trials. She died on March 12th at the age of 15. And listen to this beautiful story. At the time of her death, the church bell spontaneously began to ring. And when her body was moved from her pallet, beautiful, fragrant white violets grew where she had lain. Since then, numerous miracles have been attributed to her intercession, curing townspeople who had crippled hands or legs. And she is, this is the reason she is known as a patron of the physically challenged. Isn't that beautiful? Now, her relics reside in the early Renaissance chapel of Santa Fina in the Collegiate Church of Santa Maria Assunta. Okay, Santa Maria Assunta in San Gimignano, Tuscany. And there you will find, this is a gorgeous church, by the way, two beautiful frescoes of scenes of her life. And this minor basilica, if you have some time, see what happens with San Gimignano, because it's such a popular tourist spot, because it's just so incredibly beautiful. I mean, it's just gorgeous. It's like, if you think of a painting or if you think of an image of Tuscany in your mind, this is it, with the towers and the hillside and the ancient, you know, walls and all of that. It's just crazy beautiful. And so many people go up the main street once you walk through the archway, and there's a ton of gorgeous ceramic shops, and it's touristy in a little bit of the area, but it's still very pretty. And they tend to spend their time on that main street going through the main archway and then in the main piazza, but they don't wander. And I'm always telling people when I advise them through Tease Italy to stroll, do the passeggiata, the passage, right? And stroll and explore. And you have to walk a little bit to get to the piazza where this church is, but it's well worth it. So if you have San Gimignano on your itinerary, or if you don't, you should if you're going to Tuscany, or even if you're in Umbria. I mean, you could head there. It's not that far. But you need to visit this beautiful church and learn more about this very touching saint, Santa Fina. Pray for us. I also want to give a shout out to the wonderful folks at the National Catholic Register. And earlier this week, they published my latest article, Finding La Dolce Vita, The Sweet Life, A Pilgrim's Guide to Italy for Jubilee 2025. Five ways to make the most of a trip to the beautiful country. Now, some of the ideas, and I was sharing this with my local listeners yesterday, some of the ideas that I have are some ideas that I get pushback on when I'm doing consultations, because people have a specific idea. They want to go at this time. They have to do this. They have to do that. And yet they're hiring me to put together an itinerary for them and tell them, you know, with my insider tips, okay, how do I navigate all this? What do I do? And one of the first things I say, which a lot of people, unfortunately, don't want to do, not that they're against pilgrimages, but they want to do their own thing. Now, that's fine, okay? But my first advice, and this is huge, is to, if you've never been to Italy before, or if you need to see the major sites, more of the major sites, you need to join an organized pilgrimage. And here's why. Because putting all the pieces together on your own, and knowing the update on the different changes and the hours of the museums, which change consistently because it's Italy, that's very hard to keep up on by yourself. And even if you hire a tour guide, which I recommend if you're doing something on your own, you can still be challenged by the different things going on. Once you are with an organized tour, what happens is all those details are planned for you. And then once you see the Vatican, the major basilicas, ancient Rome, maybe take you up to Assisi, right? Or Orvieto for the Eucharistic miracle of Corpus Christi. Give yourself maybe a few days before or a few days after. Do your own thing. But doing a pilgrimage, also in addition to having everything planned, the fellowship and the friends that you make, it's such a beautiful experience. So that's numero uno on my list. I don't have time to go through all of them, all the tips I'm giving you this morning. But number two is the time of year. My favorite year, bar none, my favorite time of year, excuse me, to visit the boot is late fall. Gorgeous, nice weather, very few crowds. I'm talking late October, early November. So take a look. It's still posted on the register. And the title of the article is, the headline reads, scrolling back up, Finding La Dolce Vita, A Pilgrim's Guide to Italy for Jubilee 2025. Speaking of Italia, we go to Roma with Joan up next. Stay tuned.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
We just did our parish mission a couple weeks ago now, and I suggested that in the course of the mission that we do something like a little mini spiritual assessment of our lives. I don't have to show this to anybody, but a great chance for us just with real honesty, just between us and Jesus, ask ourselves some questions. First question, given the fact that half of Catholics don't think God is even personal, would be to ask ourselves that. Do I think God is personal? And then to ask myself, do I think a relationship with Jesus is possible? Do I have a relationship with Jesus? And if so, what's it look like? And then perhaps a little bit more awkwardly or painfully, to ask Jesus, from his perspective, what's the friendship that we have with him look like? How would he describe our friendship with him? That might be a hard conversation to have.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
When kids get angry, a lot of parents just want to shut it down. Remember, though, that anger is a natural response to a perceived offense or need. Instead of just shutting down our kids' outbursts, it's better to help them learn to express their anger in ways that are appropriate, proportionate, and productive. Start by acknowledging and empathizing with their anger. Let them know you're happy to listen if they can express themselves appropriately. If they can't, give them some time to cool off, and when they're ready, offer to help them figure out a way to say their piece peacefully. Remember, it's not always wrong to feel angry. As parents, it's our job to help our kids harness the power of their anger for good. You can learn more about helping kids manage anger in our books, Parenting Your Kids with Grace and Parenting Your Teens and Tweens with Grace, or visit CatholicCounselors.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
From St. Tofina in San Gimignano, our saint for today, we go down to Roma, where we find our beautiful Joan Lewis, Joni, Joan's Rome, with the update from the Vatican. All right, so we have some good news on the Pope, but we don't have a release date from the hospital yet, correct? And the buongiorno,
exactly.
Buonasera, good to talk to you.
Well, you know, the funny thing is when I was on Jim and Joy on Monday with my weekly report on the Pope's health, I said that one of the things that worries everybody is that in every single health medical bulletin, it always ended with the words that the prognosis is reserved. I mean, weeks, that's what we've had, and that kind of worries and puzzles people. Well, Monday I gave that report. Tuesday, last night in the bulletin, it came out, and the prognosis is lifted. You would have thought I had some kind of ESP, but the prognosis was lifted, and the bulletin said the Pope not in imminent danger due to respiratory tract infections. Mm-hmm. You know, basically, as you said, a very positive note. But they called it, the note yesterday said the doctors kept using reserved prognosis as long as a situation of instability occurred. Once stability was reached, and this I'm quoting the Vatican sources on this, once stability was reached, the prognosis was lifted because it means the Pope is not in imminent danger due to the infections. A CAT scan is probable in the next few days in order to evaluate the pneumonia. So, Teresa, he still has pneumonia. Mm-hmm. And then the last sentence of that bulletin says, it's not yet possible to hypothesize a time for the Pope's release from Gemelli. So, in other words, you know, things are looking up. It's no longer a reserved prognosis, but they do have a bit of a way to go to get rid of the pneumonia and have him be able to be released. And, Teresa, I remember, I think it's probably 2 weeks ago now, 10, 12 days, when two of the doctors, the Pope's doctor at the Vatican and one at Gemelli Hospital, they gave a press conference, 45-minute press conference, making an opening statement and then answering all the journalists' questions. And I do remember that they said, they talked about the Pope would be able to go back to his residence at the Santa Marta when nothing, when his clinical situation could no longer be described as acute. So, you know, once they don't use that word, but they keep using the word complex. Last night's bulletin also said the situation is stable with slight improvements in a picture that remains complex. So, and I remember something. I've been thinking about the length that the Pope has been in the hospital. I think this is day 26 or 7. And interestingly enough, Alatea news site did a fascinating contrast of the hospital stays of John Paul and Gemelli and Francis. And John Paul was in a total, in his entire pontificate of 27 years, 159 days. And I think we're 50-something now with Pope Francis. But in reading all those statistics, looking at the fact that Pope still has to stay in the hospital, so we'll most likely be going over a month, I can remember when my dad was in the hospital for quite a number of weeks, about 2 years before he died, and then when I was in a hospital in Rome for a month, had life-saving surgery. In both instances, America and Italy, doctors told me when I was going to be released, and they told Dad when he was going to be released, that for every week you spend in a hospital, the body needs a month to recover.
Wow.
And well, you think about it, too. I mean, we don't know how much walking, if any, that, you know, Pope Francis has done, so we don't know activity. You don't use your heart muscles and arm muscles and everything else very much, just laying in bed or sitting in a chair. So just that kind of lack of exercise, the whole body's been resting for a month, except obviously for his crises. I don't mean to say that the Pope's, you know, had a lazy month. He's had the breathing crises, which had to obviously even had an effect on his heart, as anybody listening to us knows, if they've ever had an asthma attack or had difficulty breathing with bronchitis. So just even looking towards the future, it will be when he gets back to the Santa Marta, that will be very interesting. And Teresa, I'm thinking probably you and our listeners have read a number of times the Pope and the Vatican, all these right. almost 12 years, his anniversary is tomorrow, he gets up at 4:30 in the morning. He goes
right.
to bed at 10:30.
He's an early riser, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and in the hospital, he's sleeping till 8. I'm sure that the doctors would not be happy if he, and they said this in their press conference, they said he's got to change his schedule. And that was before a lot of the critical breathing, you know, episodes. So it's still a long road, but as the expression goes, there seems to be light, you know, at the end of the tunnel. And Teresa, it'll only be when he gets back to Santa Marta that when he's released, I'm sure the doctors will let us know what they have advised the Pope, et cetera, et cetera. So we keep on praying. Maybe the prayers have done some good.
It is going to be very interesting because his schedule, I mean, and any schedule of any pope would be grueling because of the responsibility as not only the leader of the worldwide Catholic Church, but the head of Vatican City State, where he's a diplomat, basically, and sees so many different people from all over the world. But, you know, you're talking about if he goes back and starts working right away, I'm not a doctor, but just common sense that being 88 years old, your body is not going to be able to handle that. So even when he gets out, God willing, hopefully soon, there's got to be an adjustment. I'm not advising him, but it would seem that they would say, okay, you know, Papa Francesco, you have to chill for the next couple of weeks before you get back to any activity.
And if they say he has to chill for a couple of weeks, they're probably going to tell him the truth, and it's longer than that, you know. So
yeah.
We know that the whole world knows that Pope Francis does have a mind of his own, but all he's going to have to do these days, Teresa, hopefully, you know, when he gets back, is remember the critical moments and don't do anything, Holy Father, that's going to bring those moments on again. Don't overexert yourself. You know, don't fill your calendar with a whole bunch of audiences. Meeting one individual might not be too bad. Meeting five individuals in an hour and a half, that would be taxing for you and me.
Right.
So we just have to hope that the doctors are very severe. And then, you know, the Pope does have, it's been about 3 or so years now, Pope Francis does have his own personal medical assistance. Massimiliano from the Vatican medical staff. So he will have him, and then we don't know, but we're only going to guess that there will probably be some kind of breathing apparatuses and other things, installed in the Santa Marta residence just for any kind of emergency. So it's been a long road. What I know about this type of serious illness from experiences that friends and I and my dad and others have had. The road to recovery is long, but you know what? If you do what the doctors say, and then if they say don't do this, you mustn't do it. So if they can follow the doctor's instructions, even an 88-year-old pontiff can improve. So, and tomorrow, Teresa marks 12 years that
wow.
he was elected.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have that postcard that you can get in Rome of Benedict hugging Francis as Benedict is about to go on the helicopter. I'll never forget you describing it on EWTN Live the night that happened with the sunset over Rome and Benedict flying off. And, oh, gosh, that was like 12 years ago already. Now, he did say, Pope Francis did say, if he ever, because of Benedict's resignation, if he ever felt, talking about Pope Francis now, that he couldn't physically handle the schedule anymore, that he would consider resigning. But, you know, a lot of the media, especially here in the States, are already have him resigned and stepping down and all that. But, you know, I keep telling them, look, there's nothing on that yet. So let's take a breath and let's wait,
sure.
Give him a chance to figure out what's happening health-wise.
And I don't think we know that, you know, he did say that at the beginning, he said sometime within the last year that at the beginning of his papacy that he, had signed a document about if I become unable. And, of course, what does unable mean?
Right.
You know, that you totally lose consciousness or that the doctors have said, by the way, we don't want you to celebrate any liturgies or meet any people for 2 months. So he can still be Holy Father in the sense of making nominations, signing
documents.
Well,
and issuing messages, as he has been,
sure,
beautiful messages that we've received. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so... So that part of it, it's gone on all these weeks, and the Times said twice now that Cardinal Parolin has seen the Pope, and then on other days, you know, one of his secretaries have come, and without a doubt, they're bringing documents to be signed or approved, or the Holy Father says, listen, I've written this message for, you know, whatever occasion. can you prepare this? So the work at the Curia, certain things involving only the Holy Father, like nominations, that has continued. And that's obviously a good feeling for all of us who are following, you know, a Pope that's aware enough, conscious, focused, et cetera, to write messages, write documents. Like the Pope was informed recently, what was the telegram he wrote about 2 days ago about something? Anyway, he was informed of, I'm trying to remember whether it was a storm or an earthquake someplace, and then he, you know, wrote a telegram deploring the event and the, you know, the victims and so forth. So he totally knows what's happening because they're keeping him informed every day. Mm-hmm. And and again, that's been a good feeling from beginning to end. Oh, and he's also been participating in the morning and afternoon sessions of the retreat for the Roman Curia.
I noticed that. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so today he does that with a video link up. Not that anybody can see him, but he can follow what's happening in the hall. And it's very interesting on the theme because the new preacher of the papal household, Father Franciscan Father Pasolini, he has been preaching on death, basically.
Mm-hmm.
The titles of the six talks given thus far, the end will be the beginning, the end of all judgment, the first death, the second death, then the question, dying or living, and then this morning's, or is it this afternoon's, this morning's was on rebirth. So they're all posted on the Vatican website. Summaries of his themes are posted on Vatican, and I think I'm going to want to reread a lot of those. Oh, and then the nightly rosary. This has been interesting. You know, it used to be outside at 9 o'clock.
Right.
Led by, and it still is, led by a member of the Roman Curia, a prefect, a cardinal from the Roman Curia. But with the beginning of the retreat, Monday was the first night, the rosary, people still gather in St. Peter's Square, but the rosary is led by a cardinal and prayed by other members of the Roman Curia inside the Paul VI Hall.
Paul VI Hall, and, yeah.
Yeah, and, but it's all transmitted on the big screens in St. Peter's Square. So I, for two nights, have watched it on EWTN and prayed with all the cardinals, and I have not gone in the square because after the bulletin, I mean after the rosary, about 10 or 15 minutes later, we get the nightly bulletin, and I'm always translating and posting that. So it's been a busy time, you know.
Yeah. What's beautiful, though, too, and I know we talked about this more than once, is that this has become praying for the Holy Father, for pilgrims who are visiting for the Jubilee year, even making it over whether they're going to St. Peter's Square or if they're going to Gemelli Hospital. There's a makeshift shrine there. People are putting candles and messages and cards there. And they're making it a part of their Jubilee pilgrimage to you know, make sure the Pope knows that the prayers continue for him. So I think that's really beautiful. Joni, great update. Thank you, my dear. We look forward to your beautiful summary on Joan's Rome at WordPress.com. And don't forget to follow her also on EWTN Television with Jim and Joy, At Home with Jim and Joy. We'll be right back to wrap up a Wednesday morning. Stay tuned.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
Hello, Steve Ray here. We're going to Normandy, France in November to celebrate the 80th anniversary of D-Day. We'll also be in Paris for the opening of the resurrected Notre Dame Cathedral. Join us on a pilgrimage of discovery through the saints and shrines of France. Catherine Laborier and the Miraculous Medal, St. Therese of Lisieux, the Incorrupt Body of Vincent de Paul, a dinner cruise through Paris on the Seine River, and so much more.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
Do you wish you could have discussions about difficult topics with your adult children? If so, don't worry, you're not alone. Hi, I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck.
And I'm Lisa Popcheck, and our book, Having Meaningful, Sometimes Difficult Conversations with Your Adult Sons and Daughters, can help you draw closer to your adult children and help guide them on the path to more faithful and meaningful lives.
You can get our latest book and all of our other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Catholic Connection here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Vanessa Denha-Garmo will be filling in for me tomorrow, and God willing, I'll be back with you on Friday morning. And Father Mitch Paco will be joining Vanessa on the program tomorrow, as he always does, her cultural connections. And he is going to be looking into and giving us his great perspective on the developments over in Syria regarding the attacks on Christians and other religious minorities. So this is a really big story. And because of his extensive travel to that part of the world and his knowledge, that'll be really insightful, I'm sure. Have a great day, and God love you. St. Fina, pray for us. Talk to you soon.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Krucek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.